Forum Voices of Torah, Union for Reform Judaism, Shabbat, December 17, 2016, 17 Kislev, 5777, Parashat Vayishlach, Genesis 32:4 through 36:43, Haftarah, Hosea 11:7 through 12:12, Devar Torah, A Biblical Text of Terror, by Dr. Ellen M. Umansky. In the midst of this week's parasha, most of which focuses on Jacob's return to the land of Canaan with his wives, maidservants, and children, is a lengthy story about Jacob's only daughter, Dinah, in Genesis 34. While Jacob briefly appears in the story, he plays a surprisingly insignificant role. Indeed, after Jacob hears that Dinah has been raped by Shechem, a local Hivite priest, he neither tells anyone nor takes any action, choosing to wait until his sons, who are in the fields tending to the livestock, return home. Even when Hamor, Shechem's father, comes to see Jacob and asks that Jacob agree to let Dinah marry his son, who apparently after defiling Dinah has fallen in love with her, it is not Jacob, but his sons, who are now home, who provide Hamor with an answer. They tell him and Shechem that for Dinah to marry an uncircumcised man would bring shame upon their family. However, should all male Shechemites be circumcised, thereby becoming more like the Israelites, there would be no objection to Shechem's marrying their sister. Indeed, if all Shechemite men were circumcised, Israelite men in general would allow their daughters to marry Shechemites, and they would conceivably marry Shechemite women, settling among the Shechemites and becoming one people. This promise, it turns out, is a trick. Just over 2 days later, when the Shechemite men are still in great pain from their recent circumcisions and thus unable to defend themselves, the sons, led by Dinah's full brothers Simeon and Levi, take brutal revenge against not just Shechem, but all of the Shechemites. They kill Shechem, Hamor, and the rest of the Shechemite men, take the women and children captive, and seize all of their wealth and possessions. When Jacob expresses fear that his life and the lives of the members of his household have been endangered by the brothers' actions, Simeon and Levi's response can be seen as a rebuke, suggesting that Jacob should be more concerned about Dinah's social reputation, physical well-being, and perhaps consequent legal status. They rhetorically ask, should he then have been allowed to treat our sister like a whore? Genesis 34 can best be described as a text of terror, a term coined by Christian feminist theologian Phyllis Trible, to refer to scriptural narratives in which women suffer as victim. Many years ago, I wrote a midrash in which I attempted to view Genesis 34 through the eyes of Dinah, since even though the biblical text is purportedly about her, she, even more than her father Jacob, is silent. How might she have felt, I wondered, after her rape and Shechem's ensuing declaration of love? Did Simeon and Levi forcibly remove her from Shechem's house, as Genesis 34:26 implies? Or was she relieved to go with them? Did she believe that her brother's acts of violence were acts of revenge? Or, in her mind, was there another motivation? As I wrestled with the biblical text, my answers became clear. My midrash began. The sun had already set, yet Dinah still heard the cries, the women crying from pain and humiliation, the children dazed and afraid to move, afraid that if they did, they would be raped like their mothers or killed like their fathers. Dinah covered her ears and closed her eyes, wishing she had only imagined the screams of the Canaanites. According to Midrashic tradition, Dinah herself was to blame, since God created the first woman from Adam's rib, a part of his body that was covered. Women were to be modest by nature. Thus, Dinah acted unnaturally by going out, and in doing so, endangered herself. As the 4th century Rabbi Berechiah said, in Rabbi Levi's name, this may be compared to one who was holding a pound of meat in his hand, and as soon as he exposed it, a bird swooped down and snatched it away. Bereshit Rabbah 85. Yet the biblical text itself does not fault Dinah for publicly socializing with the Canaanite women. Indeed, as the Torah a Women's Commentary notes, the justification that Simeon and Levi give to Jacob for their acts of revenge indicate that in their view, Shechem's offer of bride money and gifts after he had sexually defiled their sister maligned her character by implying that she had made herself available to him as a prostitute. In my midrash, Dina comes to believe that the real motive of Simeon and Levi for killing the Shechemite men and taking the women and children captive was not to revenge her honor, but to justify their conquering the land of Canaan. Certainly, I think my interpretation is plausible. Yet, like so much else in Genesis 34, Dina's own understanding of her brother's action is unknown. I ended the essay in which my midrash on Dina appeared by maintaining that if we are to create or attempt to create a non-patriarchal, non-androcentric Judaism, a Judaism in which the experiences of both men and women are seen as central, we Jewish women need to reclaim our voices. In so doing, we need to imagine what our foremothers, like Dina, might have said, if only they had spoken. Were I to write this essay today, I would amend the last sentence. Dina, of course, did speak, but like so many of our Jewish foremothers, her words, sadly, were not recorded. Dr. Ellen M. Umansky is the Carl and Dorothy Bennett Professor of Judaic Studies at Fairfield University in Fairfield, Connecticut, Professor of Religious Studies, and Director of the University's Bennett Center for Judaic Studies. She is a longtime member of Reform Congregation Kol Ami in White Plains, New York.